Texas Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Haney. It can be physical, verbal, emotional, financial, or a matter of neglect, but elder abuse is a growing problem in the U.S. Some studies indicate that 1 in 10 seniors have suffered some form of abuse at least once. Representatives of elder abuse prevention shelters from 7 states met last week in Mason for a symposium to strengthen the network of shelters that protect victims of elder abuse. The 9 existing shelters in the U.S. have come together to form the Spring Alliance. My guests are CEO and President of Cedar Village and the Shalom Center for Elder Abuse Prevention at Cedar Village, Carol Silver Elliott, and Dan Reingold, President and CEO of the Hebrew Home at Riverdale and the Weinberg Center for Elder Abuse Prevention. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Carol and Dan, thank you for being here this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Dan, how prevalent and serious is elder abuse in the United States?
The prevalence of elder abuse in the United States is an unclear number, but estimates put it at between 2 to 3 million victims each year. The reason it's unclear is because we're in such a new domain of identifying elder abuse, and there's not even some clear definitions of what people perceive to be abuse. And so that's one of the factors. The second factor is that there are mixed states that have mandatory reporting, and therefore we're not in a position to have clear records. But the general rule of thumb that experts such as Carol and others in the field tend to adopt is that there are probably between 2 and 3 million victims of elder abuse each year.
So it's hard to get comprehensive numbers, and it's hard to get a real picture of this problem, Carol?
It is. We know it's a big problem. We know it's a growing problem. You know, the more pressures that families feel, the more likely it is that we're going to see episodes of abuse. And one of the things we also know, it's very underreported because our older adults either don't have the resources to report it or are ashamed and embarrassed to report it. So we really don't have a good handle on those statistics.
Dan, what are some examples of the types of elder abuse? I mean, it runs the gamut from a number of different things, doesn't it? It can be physical, it can be emotional, it can revolve around money matters, can't it?
That's exactly right. There are, you know, we like to say in the field of elder abuse that if you've seen one case of elder abuse, you've seen one case of elder abuse. Each one of them can be very different. Ultimately, there are some common themes of coercion and control. But the cases that we've seen in the Weinberg Center at the Hebrew Home in Riverdale, as in New York, have ranged from financial abuse, where a son or daughter has slowly pilfered all the money out of mother's account, leaving her destitute, to a situation where we had a son who was a drug user, and he actually stole his mother's prosthetic device, her leg, and sold it in order to buy drugs. The cases are horrifying. We would be really horrifying a lot of your listeners to go through them, and I know Carol has also experienced and seen some really horrifying cases of elder abuse as well.
Absolutely. We are always astonished at the depth of cruelty one human being can perpetrate on another, particularly when you remember that elder abuse by definition is abuse at the hands of a trusted caregiver, most often a family member. And when you think about what someone is doing to their spouse or more likely their parent or their grandparent, it's truly horrifying.
Carol, can abuse include something like just passive neglect of a person?
Oh, absolutely. Neglect is another form of abuse. We had a case at Cedar Village recently at the Shalom Center of a woman who was brought into the emergency room actually by a home care worker who identified her in the community. The woman weighed under 80 pounds, and she was not a tiny little woman to begin with, so she was fairly tall, weighed under 80 pounds, was malnourished, dehydrated. The emergency room staff thought that she had significant dementia, but it turns out that she was literally being starved to death, and that was neglect on the part of her loved one.
Oh, that's sad. Is there such a thing as self-neglect?
There is also self-neglect, and unfortunately, that's a very difficult issue that that folks deal with. It is for someone whose psychological issues may interfere with them caring for themselves appropriately. Those are difficult cases to address and difficult to resolve.
Dan, am I correct about this? The Weinberg Center for Elder Abuse Prevention was the first such shelter in the nation?
Yes, that's correct. We opened on January 1st, 2005. We were really quite shocked to discover that there were no other shelters in the nation. We had first gone out to see what others were doing, and when we found that there was no shelter, we immediately implemented our shelter. And a part of our mission is not only to provide emergency shelter for victims, but also to encourage other nonprofit facilities, and even in some cases for-profit facilities, to replicate the shelter model. The model that Carol runs at Cedar Village, the Shalom Center, is really one of the finest examples of the replication because of how well she and her team have integrated victims into the community and how quickly they have spread the word into the community for people to recognize abuse. And I just to spend a minute on that, Mark, one of the problems that we have in the field of elder abuse identification is that it is very different than child abuse and domestic violence. In fact, we are today with elder abuse where we were with domestic violence and child abuse probably 40 years ago. And, you know, where we're just beginning to peel away the onions and begin to look at the layers of abuse, the layers of things. One of the biggest differences between elder abuse and domestic violence or child abuse is that our society isolates elderly people. We are an ageist society. Our elders tend to be home. They're not as visible. They're not coming to school every day or involved in the community in the case of a woman. And the other difference is that 20% or more of the victims are men. And so we're dealing with a very new cohort of population that needs to be addressed, and one where the victims are hidden in plain sight. And what I mean by that is that a perpetrator of abuse could be accompanying or appear to be accompanying the victim to a bank when in fact the victim is under duress and is being told to take money out. So that the public doesn't see the fear or the violence or the threats of violence. And in fact, in some cases, perpetrators even are perceived to be caring and devoted children when in fact they're squeezing mom's arm harder and harder, demanding that she take money out to give to him. So there are some real differences there between elder abuse and domestic violence, and ones that, you know, require a very new way of looking at the problem.
So, Dan, are cases of elder abuse usually discovered by accident?
They're discovered by accident, but more and more as places like the Shalom Center and places like the Weinberg Center begin to create more public awareness, people begin to recognize abuse where they didn't see it before. And this is one of the main important features that the shelter model provides, is not just creating a safe place, but also creating public awareness. And, you know, even things like this radio program, I hope will be listened to by people who may suspect that something is going on and don't know what to do about it, and may now learn that, you know, what it looks like and what they can do.
You know, Dan makes a very good point. Part of our mission at the Shalom Center is certainly to provide emergency shelter. That's the number one thing that we do, is to be that safe haven. But beyond that, we see our responsibility as one of building community awareness and educating. So we've made a commitment that says anyone who wants to learn about elder abuse, about what to look for, about how to prevent it, about what to do, we'll go train them. We'll train them, we'll talk to them, we'll go out and work with them, because it's so important to us to spread that message so that this problem is no longer under-recognized. In the last 2 weeks, we actually had an abuse victim come to Cedar Village who was identified by a home care worker who we had trained. This social worker went into the home and recognized that the woman, elderly woman, had bruises on both her arms, significant bruises, and knew enough to ask the questions, recognized that her son had been abusive to her, that the granddaughter had removed all the phones and other means of communication from the grandmother so that she couldn't call for help. There were drugs involved. And within 2 hours, the police had been called, made a report to us that this woman was in fear of her life, and we brought her to shelter. this would not have happened, I don't think, without an increase in awareness and an increase in training. People have to know what to look for. All of us have to know what to look for.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can also email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Carol, among older adults, who's the most vulnerable in that group?
Really, the most vulnerable people are the older of the older adults. So we're talking people who are over 80, who are more frail, women more than men, but certainly someone who has some cognitive impairments may be more at risk. You know, the higher someone gets in age, the more medical conditions they have, certainly the more vulnerable they become. But there again, you know, as Dan said, one case is one case. There are younger people who have been victims of abuse. You know, if you think about Mickey Rooney, who went public talking about elder abuse, here's a man who was fully intact cognitively, who had lots of resources and the ability to access them, and yet was a victim of elder abuse. So it can truly happen to anyone.
Dan, what are the signs to look for if you suspect elder abuse?
It's a very good question. We encourage people to use your basic senses. If you're assuming that you can get behind the closed doors of a victim, one of the things we'll ask people is to smell, look, look at the physical environment. If the housing accommodation has a bad smell, it indicates that there's really neglecting care going on. If you have an opportunity to look in the refrigerator and see if there's food, have the bed sheets been changed? These kinds of things. But it's not often that easy to get behind the closed doors. And so one of the things that we do is we want to get people who are encountering elderly people as part of their daily work. For example, the teller at the bank, the pharmacist at the drugstore, even the checkout counter girl, or boy, I shouldn't say girl, but the checkout person at the supermarket, who knows the person, and could even just ask, you know, is everything okay at home? Are you scared of anything? Is there anything worrying you? We at the Weinberg Center in New York have begun to train the doorman, because so many folks in New York City live in buildings with doormen and superintendents, that we've engaged in a partnership with their union and now do a training of them on a regular basis, so that they can begin to ask questions of the tenants in their building. It might be a letter carrier who begins to see mail beginning to pile up and not being collected as frequently as it was before. Another person that we'd love to get to are hairdressers, because a victim of abuse may be more likely to talk to a hairdresser, or a hairdresser may be more cognizant of bruising on the face or head of a victim. So, you know, there isn't really one thing to look at. I think it's more about getting into a place where we begin to take an interest in our elderly neighbors, ask about their welfare. So many people live among elderly people, yet we never knock on the door and just say, hey, I want to check in on you. Is everything okay? And so I think the biggest advice that I would recommend is to be involved with a neighbor, to ask about an elderly's welfare. The worst thing that can happen is that they're going to feel very grateful that somebody has taken an interest in them. Many older people are lonely, and just that fact that you've taken an interest is enough for them to open up a little bit. And if some form of abuse does come subsequently, they may be more inclined to reach out for help.
You know, I absolutely agree with everything that Dan has just said. And I would add to that, one of the things that we say to people, particularly when we're educating community members, is when you know an elderly person and something looks different to you. So here's a person who's always been well-groomed who is suddenly disheveled. Or here's a woman that you used to see in the pew in front of you in church every Sunday morning, but she's not there anymore. You know, some of those things that say something's different, something's changed, what's going on, to take that interest and begin to ask that question. We actually have had a referral that came from a beautician who had an elderly client who kept saying, ouch, when she was moving in the chair, and lo and behold, she'd been the victim of physical abuse. Emergency room staff, all of those people in the hospital setting, physicians certainly are good people to train, but attorneys are others. The Weinberg Center has developed actually a screening tool that attorneys use and that we've educated them on so that they too can be looking for it. I would tell you that if any of us really thought about all of the people in our lives, it's quite likely there's an elderly person we might want to ask a question about. When we first began this project, I remember saying to my staff, oh my goodness, we will be able to help people that we haven't touched before. And as soon as the words left my mouth, I realized that we already knew people who were in that situation, that we had someone in our building whose daughter had been paying the rent and suddenly stopped and the money was gone. We had had victims who had come in, not identified as victims, but as people who had been through very dire circumstances. So unfortunately, it's all around us. It's really a question of being attuned to it and opening our eyes.
If someone suspects that an elderly person is being abused, what steps should they take? Do they need to report it? Who do they report it to?
You know, the first thing is to ask the person if they're okay, if you have that opportunity. If you really feel that you need to make a report or if something's concerning you, you can call throughout our area here in Cincinnati. In the Cincinnati area, Adult Protective Services exists in every county. They will open a file. They won't require you to give your name. They will simply open a file and do an investigation. They know what to do and they know how to do it. If you see something that looks urgent or emergent, call the police. They are very responsive. They're willing to take action. You can also call us at the Shalom Center if you just want to ask a question and need more information, and we can help connect you with the right organization to call for further follow-up.
Beth called in with a question. Carol or Dan, whoever wants to field this one. The question is, what about low-income seniors who are in public housing? Do they see a lot of abuse in those situations? Is income level a factor in either of these?
I can jump in on that. There is one of the things about elder abuse is it's a non-discriminatory crime. It cuts across every socioeconomic level. You can, in New York City, we had the Astor case, Brooke Astor, who was a very renowned and extremely wealthy socialite who was being abused by her son and daughter-in-law. And certainly in low-income situations, the abuse can occur. So there is no guideline about economics or race or color or national origin. Abuse occurs in every situation. And in a public housing setting, it could be a situation where people are not aware of what's going on right next door. So very important to reach out. And just I want to really underscore what Carol said about reaching out in an emergent situation. Call 911 if somebody feels that an elder is in danger. Don't wait. These can be very kind of dramatic situations and cases where anger and intensity could be present. And if you have any doubts at all, the best thing is to call the police.
Last week, there was a national seminar on dealing with elder abuse that was held at Cedar Village in Mason. And Carol, what was accomplished out of that? What came out of that conference?
This was actually the second national meeting of what's called the Spring Alliance, which represents all of the shelters that are in existence or in formation. And it's an opportunity for us to get together in one place and to really share ideas and information. We had a chance for each of the shelters to present so that folks had some benchmark information. There were networking opportunities for us to really ask questions of one another and learn from one another. And then we also brought in some national experts to talk about some of the research that's being done in elder abuse and some of the other things that are out there that will help us to improve our practice and improve our knowledge base. So it was really a day well spent connecting and learning and educating one another.
Dan, is the conference a significant step in dealing with this problem?
It really is. When we first opened the shelter in 2005, and it was not only the first shelter in the United States, but the only shelter in the United States, we quickly realized that we needed to develop expertise through partnerships and collaboration. And it doesn't surprise me that all of the organizations that have joined the Spring Alliance, and I believe there's 11 now, are nonprofit organizations or government organizations. And there's a wonderful desire on the part of all the people that attended the conference at Cedar Village, and Carol hosted a really beautiful event. We all learned a lot from each other. One of the things that the Weinberg Center did when we sought partners to replicate, and we were continuing to seek partners to help replicate, we let people know that anything that we've developed or designed or implemented since our beginning, we share at no cost. We give it away to any other organization that wants to do a shelter. The only thing we ask is, when you improve on it, please let us know what you've done better, because all of us recognize that we are really in the infancy of a major, major epidemic. I would even call it a public health crisis. And we must learn from each other, because there really is no template. There's no book that teaches about this. And so coming together in Mason, Ohio last week, as we did last year in the Bronx, is a wonderful chance for all of us to get together, to share ideas, to develop areas where we think we need to improve or change. And it's a very supportive and smart group of people.
Carol, why aren't there more shelters at this point? Is there a specific reason that more communities don't have these?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think when we first started our shelter 2.5 years ago, I remember saying to some of my colleagues, I don't understand why everyone doesn't do this. It, you know, what we're really talking about here is providing a safe haven. And what we're talking about within the walls of a retirement community is a bed. You know, we have a bed, we have the services, they're already there. So all we're really offering is that safe place with some services at an incremental cost. I think there are misconceptions out there. I think people are concerned about the expense, or they're concerned about the logistics, or they haven't even really given it enough thought. And, you know, since we began it 2 years ago, we were number 6 in the country. We're now up to number 11, as Dan indicated. So perhaps there is some momentum growing, but it is definitely a grassroots movement. It is something that is starting really on the ground and growing forward. And I certainly hope that there will be more folks who see this as a really vital issue to take part in.
Does Cedar Village offer any educational resources for people who are looking for more information on elder abuse, things like seminars?
We absolutely do. If someone calls the Shalom Center or emails the Shalom Center, we will be happy to send information. We'll be happy to come out and talk to a group of any size, small to large, at any time, because we feel so strongly this word has to get out.
And you can find links to more information about the Shalom Center, the Weinberg Center, and the Spring Alliance Movement at WVXU.org. Dan and Carol, thank you both for being here this afternoon. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this problem, Mark.
CEO and President of Cedar Village and the Shalom Center for Elder Abuse Prevention at Cedar Village, Carol Silver Elliott. Also Dan Reingold, President and CEO of the Hebrew Home at Riverdale and the Weinberg Center for Elder Abuse Prevention. After the break, thinking about starting your own business, there are lots of rewards and lots of risks. Our guest today can speak from experience. And in Focus on Technology, the University of Dayton delves into radar. Ann Thompson will take us inside UD's radar lab, where some extremely precise devices are being created. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.